episodes. We're going to shift our focus to my so-called life over the next few months. We hope you'll stick around for this journey. If you want to touch base with us, all of the same social media, at Narbos Podcast on Twitter, at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram, and narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. If you want to talk to us about my so-called life or come on to an episode, please let us know. We will get back to Degrassi episodes after we're done reviewing my so-called life in a few months. Don't fear, though, if you're missing that content, we've got well over 150 episodes of Degrassi reviews for you. Head over to anywhere where you listen to your podcasts and go back into our history. Hope you enjoy them, and hopefully you'll enjoy our reviews of my so-called life. Let's do it.
School's a battlefield for my heart, and it's so weird when you see someone you just dreamed about. Jordan Catalano, you lean so cold. Jordan Catalano, I'm over you. I'm over, so over you.
Welcome back to 1995, where you were booting up Windows 95 for the first time, where if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. Where the threat of bleeding from all your orifices thanks to Ebola was in our minds, and where Quebec almost left Canada. Gangsta's Paradise led the Billboard music charts, and ER was pulling in a crazy 22.1 rating on the Tube TV. It was an incredible year for movies. Casino, amazing. The Usual Suspects, awesome. Braveheart, never seen it, but told it was awesome. Toy Story, incredible. The Return of James Bond, loved GoldenEye, and Billy Madison all premiered. But more importantly, episode 16 of My So-Called Life was thrust into our lives. And who do we have on here tonight to discuss part two of this episode? Sending it down the street to Toronto.
You also missed WrestleMania 11, featuring a main event between Bam Bam Bigelow and Football Hall of Famer Lawrence Taylor.
No, I didn't miss it.
That was the main event of WrestleMania 11, everybody. Spoiler alert, it did not do well. I am Alan, and hello, everybody. I can talk wrestling all you'd like. I'm sure that's what you've tuned in for, so stay tuned. I'm going to take it up the Trans-Canada and a bunch of other highways.
Across a ferry.
Yeah, and we're going to land over at Barry's place.
Yeah. Bam Bam's going to get slammed, I think, is what Salt and Pepper sang that theme.
Yeah. Yep.
Hi, I'm Barry. I could also talk wrestling all day, but again, that's not why you're tuning in here. So I'm here as well, and we're going to send it up Indian Mill Line to the Torbay Bypass Road. You go north on the Torbay Bypass Road to Baleen Line. You make a right on Baleen Line to Patrick's Lane, I think.
Yeah, get my exact address. Yeah.
There you go.
You want to come over.
And then you do a bunch of other stuff, which I won't say.
Say,
is Patrick's Lane a lane where Patrick lives on?
Well, eventually. My middle name is Patrick. Oh, now they have my banking
too
information.
Much info.
No. Yeah. Yeah, your password.
Social insurance number is.
Give me all your credit card numbers, and I'll see if you have a winner.
You're so kind. In this Bam Bam Bigelow match, did Lawrence Taylor do a football tackle, perhaps?
Yeah, that's like how he won the match.
Yeah, whoa.
Off the Look second rope.
Off the second rope.
He made it all the way to the second rope.
That's true. Yeah. And also, Shawn Michaels wrestled Diesel for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. And it is, it was widely kind of said that Shawn Michaels totally stole all of Diesel's thunder by they were like best friends too, but totally outclassed him in the match and kind of derailed a big D's momentum. So again, wrestling, everybody, amazing.
Yeah. Psycho Sid was in his corner.
That's right. Yep. But they couldn't spell the name with the word P. So he was S-Y-C-O.
That's right.
Psycho. Yep.
Was that the one Pamela Anderson was there too?
Yes, Pamela Anderson.
Yes, that was that match. Yeah.
And Jenny McCarthy were both at ringside. And Pam Anderson at this event, as well as at the Royal Rumble at the start of 1995, could not have given a fuck about being there. You just see it in her face the whole time. It would be like if I took my girlfriend to wrestling and you put the camera on her face. That was Pamela Anderson. Yeah.
Why am I here?
Yeah. And like at the start of WrestleMania 11, Pamela Anderson, like they have her pulling up in the limo and getting out and getting escorted away. And all the fucking wrestlers are there to meet her, including like Mabel and Doink and like the three little clowns. And they're all like, oh, yeah, come and get some of this. It's great. Yeah. Yeah. So many horny wrestlers. Yeah.
Also, if you haven't realized, this is part two of Oops All Dudes. So it's going to be more of this foolishness we're talking about for pretty much the whole episode.
And then this
so
happened in like wrestling.
Part,
we've just been sitting on the floor and eating popcorn and chips and pizzas everywhere.
Pounding brewskis. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
I'm Ted. Let's throw back to the host.
And I'm Tim, and just for another list of the other movies that came out in 95 for those interested, it was a lineup. Apollo 13, 12 Monkeys, Heat, 7, Clueless, Empire Records, Bad Boys. It was a great year for movies, guys.
Good job. It's like,
movie phone came to life, and he's on the podcast with us playing at
welcome to Movie Phone
PM Eastern Standard Time.
All right, so we're here to talk about part two of episode 16, Resolutions. As a reminder, it was directed by Patrick Norris, written by Winnie Holtzman and Ellen Herman. As we mentioned last week, that Space for More called this one of the best episodes of any TV show they had ever seen. So yep. Let's see if it lives up to that. Quick recap. The group has made New Year's resolutions. As I wrote, most are useless, or most give up their resolutions as the episode goes through. Ricky is still struggling to find a place to call home, possibly traveling on his own odyssey. He has spent some time at the Chases, but feel he's worn out his welcome or overheard that he had worn out his welcome. Brian is tutoring Jordan, but we start to wonder as who is really tutoring who? Yes. Graham is still being coaxed into the restaurant and maybe into something else. And Sharon is using Kyle as a fuckboy whenever Brad Pitt is brought up. So, any thoughts before we jump into this?
So where is Ricky actually staying? Is he sleeping on the street somewhere? I guess we don't really know.
At this point, yeah, I don't know. I guess, well, we'll find out. It seems like it's, I don't know how much time has passed.
Well, despite all the other events that we see that would indicate that a lot more time has passed, it feels like in the Ricky storyline, it's only like a night or two.
It seems like it, yeah.
Yeah, because like night number one, he certainly spent the night somewhere that we don't know, but we're going to see the events of like night number two, I think, over the course of this
I think one. It's one night, really, isn't it? It feels like maybe he made it through a night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the winter in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, with no snow. 23rd. Like, it's a lot of rain, but no snow, right?
Yeah.
So, come on, Pittsburgh.
Well, someone told me who said you can golf all year round in Pittsburgh, so I'm not really sure how much snow they actually get there.
I think they get some snow. They must.
They must, yeah. They must.
Fuck the Steelers.
I was going to say, was that underscore more guy said that too? Yeah. We listen to that guy too much, and we don't even know if it's a guy.
Okay, so we pick up in the second half of this episode at Mr. Katimsky's office. Ricky comes in to class early because he wants to talk about the Odyssey. I guess it's the morning because you can tell he's very hungry because his eyes keep turning to Mr. Katimsky's donut that's sitting on his desk, not an apple, because... You know, teachers would rather have a donut, and I can speak from experience. I'd rather be given a donut. Katimsky offers his donut. He says he has no need for it. He sees no need for donuts after he's given up coffee.
Come on.
Really, Ricky's... Sorry?
Come on. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Donuts are fantastic. Fuck coffee.
Donuts are fantastic.
Do teachers, like... The teacher's lounge is just boxes of donuts, right? Like, that's how it works in there, right? And smoke.
Yeah, like that's how we act. That's what we sit on, old boxes of donuts.
That's right. I figured.
Yeah.
Empty liquor bottle cases.
my dad was a teacher back in the 90s, I guess, when I was in high school. You're still allowed to smoke in the staff room, and holy fuck. What a stink if you're going
smoke them if you got them, Johnny.
Amongst the tears of failed students.
Mm-hmm.
So we find out that Ricky wants an extension on his essay. He says he's read the book, but he just really hasn't had time to do it. And in the interim, he starts to talk about the Odyssey. And I must say, you can tell Katimsky's starting to evaluate him here, which is what good teachers would do. Okay, you're going to just actually orally tell me versus write it down. Perfect. I'm gonna mark it now. But
I mean, he says that Ricky flat out says, right, that he doesn't have anywhere to live.
Yeah.
During this conversation.
Oh, well, yeah, he does later. He doesn't at this point yet, but within the conversation, he definitely does.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he talks about how the story starts in the middle, which is called in medias res, and I've learned that that's where an epic story starts with the hero in the middle of something important. So there we go. Ricky's in the middle of something important now. Like, he's following the same sort of trip as Odysseus does, just with a little less flair, I guess you'd say. Any of you guys ever seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? On a side note?
Yes.
Yes.
Like, which is just the Odyssey, right? Written separately and just differently, which is a pretty good movie.
I am a man of constant sorrow. Yeah.
Soggy Bottom Boys.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the donut? When Kaminsky
can always go back to donuts.
Can we when he hands it to Ricky, he palms it. Like, he lays his hand over the top of it. And you go like, oh, what are you doing with your dirty old hands? Yeah. Don't touch it. Like, just pick it up with a napkin or something. But he full on grabs the top of it and goes, here you go. It's like, ugh.
It's like the actor, like, doesn't know how to handle donuts.
Yeah.
And they only had one. Like, they're like, fuck, like, that's the only donut we had.
But, side note, group, what is your favorite donut? I'll go first. Boston cream was my favorite.
Fucking right. Boston cream. Slam dunk. Ripped the backboard off.
Tim Hortons, there was a rumor that they were bringing back cherry sticks. Yes.
Oh, yes. Thank you. There's an Italian bakery right around us that makes like a cherry stick, and damn right, I hope they bring it back.
Yeah.
That was my favorite as a kid. I love the cherry stick.
I was watching, I've been watching The Sex Lives of College Girls, and like an HBO show. Not a porn.
So I've been watching this pornography.
Or just from the window.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
And there's a scene where someone brings like fancy donuts. And I laughed when one of the guys was like, the fuck would I want a bacon like stick on my donut for? You know? So not a fan of the super. Like, I don't mind the super fancy donuts. But I'm like, why would I pay $7 for that donut? When, you know, it's just sweet. It's just different variations of sweet.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for the fancy donut. I must lie, not lie. I do like a gourmet donut. Barry, you're a little quiet there. You're not a donut man?
Not a huge donut guy. I do like a Boston cream, I guess, if I had to rate a favorite. But it's not something I have on a very consistent basis.
Wow. Hater.
If you had a...
Well, sorry for that, then.
No, I'm not a hater. I didn't even heard of a cherry stick. What's a cherry stick?
It's like
only the greatest donut ever created.
Yeah, it's a donut, but like the outside is not frosted. What's it? Glazed.
Glazed. Yeah.
So it's like kind of like a crunchy on the outside, like glazed, and then like, you know, cakeish in the middle. Yeah. But it's not like a donut. It's a stick. Like not a stick.
You know the cherry chip birthday cakes? Have you read that?
Yeah.
It's like that, but better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They actually have in Buffalo. I learned this a little late, but they have a great donut called a peanut stick, which is just, again, like a, you know, it's like a glob of fucking dough, and they deep fry it like a donut, and then they glaze it, and then they roll it around in peanuts, and then...
The peanut stick kind of sounds like a name from a dong.
My peanut stick? This, yes, it does.
The horniest member of the podcast, this fucking guy.
Yeah.
He loves it. Boston cream. I got cream. Yeah. I got your cream right here. And Eclair. Well, see, if you had a gun to my head and said, name a fancy donut, name more than one. The only one I'd be able to come up with is an Eclair, which at Tim Hortons is like, it looks like a hot dog, but it looks like a Boston cream donut, like with chocolate on top, but it's elongated, like it's stretched out.
And those were called Long Johns here when we were kids. Long Johns. Yeah.
Jeez, Long John's, really?
I've heard that too, yeah.
No, man. I've never had one. I always look behind the glass and go, that's for fancy folk.
Do you remember when Tim Hortons used to actually make the donuts in the store? So sometimes you'd get different things at different Tim Hortons?
Yes.
Oh, and they used to make like big fancy donuts like you're talking about? Oh, man. Those were the days.
What do you have, like a donut factory now?
Yeah. Donut. They're all frozen.
Oh, yeah, they just sort of
really?
Yeah.
In a, yeah.
You didn't know that? Jeez. You're like, and then the Tim Hortons employee takes all the ingredients and pours them carefully into a mixing bowl and mixes them perfectly. Yeah, like, no, it's all frozen shit.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, ruined your life.
Sorry, I lied to. Yeah. Who do I believe anymore? Still good,
they
though.
They said vats of coffee cold and you just heat it up now. That's what
they
do.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so we were talking about how Ricky's asking for his extension on his Odyssey essay or two-page report. He admits that he's like Odysseus because he has no place to live. So that's sort of where we get the idea that he admits he doesn't really have a home. He's just kind of wandering around. He said he enjoyed living at the Chases, but it made him feel lonelier because he doesn't really have what she has, right? Like, she has the family, she has a brother or sister, she has parents. He says they're really nice and they have a really great family, but it just makes him feel lonely. And then we learn straight up that his aunt and uncle have just left him as he gets taken to the guidance counselor.
Odysseus, and write it into narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com if I'm wrong. But as far as I remember, Odysseus was headed home from the Achaean War and or maybe Aegean War. Anyways, he was headed home. And when he finally got back to Ithaca, his dog Argus came out and saw him at the sight of Odysseus. He dropped dead. I'm like, oh fuck! Like, come on, don't kill the dog in the show. So, and also there was a bunch of like lads hanging out, all these suitors. So Odysseus shows up and they're all trying to get with his wife, and he's like, oh fuck, I gotta murder y'all. So like he murders everybody, and then like everything works out. And he's like, hey, baby.
The Greeks could tell.
He's like Beavis. He's like, oh, no, like Butthead. Hey, baby. And everything is fine. That's my write in if it's different. Anyway,
I like your telling of it.
Well, thanks. That's what I that's what I remember. That's what I think it is. If it's different, let me know. Let us know.
All right. So we cut to the guidance counselor's office. Ricky tells the guidance counselor that he thinks he can get a job and apartment, but Kathy, who we learn is the guidance counselor's name, thinks that that's a little unreasonable. So she's offering up what I think is maybe like a group home. Maybe you guys can help me because I'm not really sure. It's not really explained. Something called Pride House. You guys, group home?
Yeah, I mean, she says it's great and almost like a family. Yeah. And that's kind of all she says about it, right? Like,
and let's remember, Wheels did not want to go to Pride House.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but yeah.
More of a Michelle turn here now.
That old bag.
So yeah, it sounds like it's a group home, which Ricky's already kind of shunned different group homes, but I guess this is a different group home, right? So who knows?
Yeah, this is the group home. So after Ricky leaves, Kathy, the counselor, tells Mr. Katimsky that even with her connections, it will take weeks at best to get him in. And then, and rightfully so, Katimsky says, well, what about tonight? What's like, you can tell that this interest in Ricky has increased in Mr. Katimsky's mind.
Well, and they don't say anything when Ricky's in the room, right? Like, she knows that he's got nowhere to go that night. And it's like, well, good night.
Exactly. She could have said this like literally 30 seconds ago while he was in the room going, and she's like almost pulls her collar, go, wouldn't want to be that kid.
Hope he survives
tonight. Tell him.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to find out that he has no place to sleep tonight.
Well, he will.
Instead of setting up this false hope. Bad counselor.
Now we bounce to the hallway, and Brain Krakow is asking Sharon to trade her student for Jordan because he has no respect for him, and he feels like a hypocrite if he were to help him. Kyle comes by and gives Sharon a love you very much bear, to which Brian laughs, which rightfully so. Uh-huh. It is kind of funny and lame.
Did you give anyone of these bears? Like a bear like this? Did anybody give a cheesy gift like this?
No.
To a girl in high school?
I gave a gift not that said I love you very much. There's no fucking way. There was a guy in my in the grade above me that used to fucking do gestures like this all the time for girls who were never into him. And then eventually dated my friend Jamie. There were four in a row. So This kid once wrote a letter when he was in grade 11 to somebody who was in grade 9 after a month into the school year. And the letter started off with the words, "I was scoping out the new grade 9s and..." Yep.
You're the one I picked.
Yep.
Ding, ding, ding. You're the winner.
Yep.
Just like you go to the store and look at the new motorcycles. Go like, "Oh, I pick you. Brum, brum. May I ride thee?" What the fuck? Jesus. Come on.
Yep.
That is fantastic.
So Brian and Sharon begin to talk back and forth, but they're actually having two different conversations. We learn that Sharon's come to the conclusion, and we hear her voice increase in octaves every single sentence, that she can't use Kyle anymore, and Brian just leaves confused. She hands Brian the bear, and a couple girls are in the hallway commenting on how cute his bear is. She gets embarrassed. I guess he's doesn't like the bear.
There's also a squeaker in this bear.
There is.
I was watching it on the TV. Oh, Linda got very interested in this show. She was walking up to the TV going, what the hell? What's going on?
Brain?
Yeah, she was all about it. And he keeps squeaking it, and she's like, what the fuck? I need to eat that now. Thank you.
So we bounce to the tutoring class. Brian is trying to get rid of Jordan by telling him he doesn't have the skills to help him, which we talked last week that Jordan thinks his name's Brain. So I think at least Brian can help him with that, at least in bare minimum, get him to teach him something. He says he has no background in this stuff that Jordan's weak in, which we've learned is everything.
Uh-huh.
Except for one very good skill that Jordan will demonstrate pretty soon. Jordan just randomly asks, what's that bear?
Bear?
Bear Krakow? Oh, your name's Bear Krakow. There's a girl that comes over to ask Brian for an eraser. I did my Arlo due diligence here. This girl's name is Dina Dayrit. And she is referenced as Pencil Girl.
Yes.
In this episode.
In the credits.
The only other acting highlight is as girl number one in Beverly Hills 90210. So Arlo, I don't think we need to talk about Dina too much.
What a resume, right? Girl number one and Pencil Girl.
Not even a racer girl. They called her Pencil Girl.
Yep.
She's going to retire off those residuals. Baby.
So, oh, funny enough, about residuals. One of the guys I used to teach with, maybe I've told the story before, but he was actually in the show Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh.
And he was one of the leads. If you remember the episode, it's actually a fairly famous Are You Afraid of the Dark episode called Pinball Wizard. I don't know if you guys remember the one, if you guys watched it as kids, but it's about this
more my brother's thing.
The one with Elton John?
But anyway. he was the main lead. And he would still say how every once in a while he would still get like a residual check, like $12 or $3. Ooh. Every once in a while would come in the mail. He would still get residuals because it's playing again. It's on TV right now.
Nice.
Are You Afraid of the Dark? They're replaying it. So Jordan, in his infinite wisdom, sees this as a come on and tells Brian that this girl would sleep with him.
No. Let's not downplay this, okay?
We need to talk about this.
I'm not saying we're done talking about
5 minutes ago. Jordan was like, Brain? Brain Krakow? Are you Brain? And now all of a sudden, he's fucking Stephen Hawking. He's like,
well, he's putting full sentences together like, to start.
That girl want to fuck it. No, that's not Stephen. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is Stephen Hawking, but no. No, like he's like all of a sudden this genius. He's just like, that girl wants to fuck you, and I am the most articulate person in the world when we talk about pussy. Like,
Rigo Suave, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So Jordan just walks over and gets the number of Pencil Girl.
And like, imagine, like, this is one where I wish that Arlo was here. Imagine that that fucking Jordan Catalano walks over to you and is like, oh, can I get your number for Brian?
Was it clarified? Did he go over and say, Brain wants your phone number, or did he say, I, Jordan Catalano, want your number?
I think he went over for Brain.
But he gives them the number, but he's like, he says to Brian, he's like, go ask her for a number. He doesn't do it. So Jordan's like, okay. So he goes over and does it. We can't hear what he says. He gets the number and drops it in Brian's lap. But he doesn't say who he got it for.
Yeah.
He got the number. Which, I think, like, if I get Jordan Catalano's coming at you, I'd give Jordan Catalano my number.
He's
like,
yeah, give him your SIN number.
Come to Torbay and give him my actual address.
I think that he was getting the number for Brian. Like, I think that that's supposed to be implied. But you're right. They're not totally clear. But I do love how he gets the number and then just tosses it at Brian like Brian's a garbage bin. Like, here it is. Like, yeah.
Look at dropping
now.
Dogs,
Brian just can't. He is so blown away by this skill. And we start to get the sense that Jordan is actually legit interested in being tutored right now, because he's talking about this book, The Odyssey, a book, it's really long, we get out of him.
Brian
back
says
to Brain Krakow talk.
Yeah, Brian says to Jordan things like, I can't believe that you like do this. Yeah. Is this how you live? That's what he says. Yeah.
Brian's like, I'm a busted nut in here. Tell me. I got to know.
And then do you have the power?
Yeah, and then they both are like laughing and chuckling over Jordan's like skills of scooping up puss, and that's when Angela walks in and like these two guys are sharing a fucking moment. Yeah.
And then Angela walks in, like she, with the sounds of how her schooling's going, should probably be getting tutored and not just showing up to the tutoring session, because she doesn't seem to be doing well in school. She sits down and Jordan just flat out asks her to have sex with him.
Yep.
Cool.
And I guess Angela, in her resolution, just says no and starts laughing because she's not going to overthink anymore. To which Jordan says, so I guess that's a no?
You say no to sex?
Yeah. With Jordan?
Yeah.
So I guess we're led to believe that maybe he's not as powerful at it. He's not such a pussy savant as we are led to believe.
I think in this situation, again, Angela, when she's talking with him, he's saying we could fuck, but I think he's actually kind of joking. But
I think so too.
Like, I'm sure that if she said, yeah, let's do it, he would go for it. And I also think that Angela is laughing, but it's more of a like taken aback that the guy's just being so bold with her. Like,
yeah. All right, so we bounce to the guidance office again. Ricky's re-entering, and he seems really excited about going to this Pride House. Because in his mind, he thinks it's done, right? He heard that he was going to get in. He heard that the guidance counselor headed in. So he was assumed he was going there that night because he had probably been called down from class. Fortunately, Mr. Katimsky has to temper his expectations by telling him he's on the dreaded waiting list, which is good, he says. But he's being placed in a temporary facility for now. I guess this is a homeless shelter, we learn.
The temporary facility, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A bad one. Like, you're going to go to a bad one.
Yeah, we will learn that.
Because the place is a good one.
Warehouse.
Yeah.
Isn't there an age it'd have to be to go to one of those bad ones like that, or no?
I mean, I guess
if you don't have, like, any parents around.
Oh, well, I guess you got to go somewhere. I figured it would be foster parent or something would be where you'd go in this situation.
I mean,
but you wouldn't think a school could put him there. You wouldn't think like that.
No, I guess.
I don't know.
I figured social services should have got involved right from the get-go here. But
well, yeah, in our world, if he's under 18, we've got to call it's escaped me.
You're very helpful to those kids. Yeah. We get you the help if I can only fucking remember
Children's
who
Aid
to call.
Society. I call the Children's Aid Society. That's what it was. Children's Aid Society, if we know anything like this is happening for a kid under 18, we've got to make the call. So, but this is America, so who knows?
Yeah.
So instead of meeting with the counselor, Ricky just walks out, leaving Mr. Katimsky by himself. Obviously, things are not going as well as Ricky would like. Then we jump to Angela's house. Graham is on the phone with Hallie talking about the restaurant, and she's relentless in that. And something about he doesn't care about his theory. Patty comes in, and as we talked about last week, is a little bit on edge thanks to Graham's brother's lack of wingman strength. She doesn't all of a sudden like that Graham is talking to Hallie. She starts to question the restaurant. She says it's not a criticism, but that's going against her resolution. Then they question each other about their own resolutions, to which they both lie and say they were just going to exercise more. So, you know, I guess it's a scene to sort of show Patty's
Yeah,
on
she's I mean, I would be too, right? Like,
yep.
You don't want in this restaurant, so what the fuck are you always talking to this woman about, right? Like, you and even when they are talking, it's not, we've seen their conversations. It's not fucking business talk. We're not looking at numbers. We're not looking at plans. It's like, come on, open the restaurant.
Not even
Graham,
what we're gonna serve.
Graham, you're going to do it. Graham, come on, open the restaurant with me, Graham. Like, it's
he's having
absurd.
The time of his life.
Yeah.
He's loving it. It's like a verbal pillow fight, a sexy pillow fight.
Yeah.
He's having, and Patty walks in, and I'll give it to Patty God. She should be like, and she is like, what the fuck? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Like, they've never even mentioned anything about, like, where they think this restaurant is going, other than they've been to the abandoned old restaurant they're going to buy with the dance floor.
Again, she's made, as far as we've seen, she's got no other plans other than Graham's going to work there, and she's just badgering him to do it, right?
And, well, I mean, and that he's not going to have to use any of his money, right? It was all going to come from their side. Oh, I get it. Yeah, it's all we really know.
There's a fountain.
Yes, and a dance floor.
Perfect.
I mean, it's all there, really, when you think about it. Business plan is there.
Well, I just got another text from Arlo. She says, I really believe in this restaurant idea in the show. Great writing, fountain, 5 stars. Oh, thanks, Arlo.
Thanks, Arlo.
Thank you.
All right. And then all of a sudden we jump to the homeless shelter. There's a quick scene. Ricky's waking up in the middle of the night, realizing he hates it or scared of it. Not for him. Can't sleep here. Whatever it is. And then he leaves to someone yelling after him. We hear sirens in the background, and we realize that this, again, probably is around the corner from the warehouse, or the warehouse has been redone into a homeless shelter or something.
Yes. You better be in jail to be in here.
Yeah, probably safer.
Yeah, some guy's like, where are you going? When he gets up slinking out.
So in sort of the same, well, I guess it's the next morning, there's a knock at the door of Angela, the Chase's house. Katimsky is there looking for Ricky because he said he got a call from the counselor that he didn't stay the night. Not sure that would happen exactly, but maybe the counselor would get the call, and I don't know, but for some reason, Mr. Katimsky points out the girls should be going to school, but I guess, again, as a teacher, we do notice those kinds of things. And then he starts to get very agitated as they go, but he blames his outburst on his lack of coffee. He starts to blame the parents for why they let Ricky go and how dare they let him go. And then Patty, or the actress who plays Patty, had maybe one of the worst breakdowns I've ever seen.
Yes.
Like, it's like it was day one of, like, I think I could have done a better job if you just
She's
told
like,
me to do this.
Yeah, it was not good.
And then she agrees that she feels the same way, which they've really never given us any indication that they missed Ricky not come back. They never mentioned that. Oh, why didn't Ricky come home tonight? Angela, where's Ricky?
How's Ricky doing? Ricky's at his aunt and uncle's. Have you talked to Ricky? Is everything okay with Ricky? Like, nothing. And Angela wouldn't not tell them, you would think, too, right? Like, Angela knows that something is still wrong here, and she hasn't said anything. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. So, yeah, like, so I don't understand why. No, I agree. We should have dealt with him better. And then we have Graham, who really seems to have no clue what's going on in the middle of the sentence. He's like, who are you? Who's this guy?
He's the only sensible person in this thing going, why are you here? Who are you?
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
I know, yeah. Patty then agrees they shouldn't have let him go, which is right. They should not have let him go. Or at least it should have made an effort when they realized, again, he didn't come back that day with Angela after school. That where is he? Katimsky's going to change the subject by mentioning that Angela is smart but doesn't really work up to her potential, which I'm sure the parents really want to hear after they've been attacked by the teacher. we now flip to the school. During the school day, we have Sharon and Ryan are walking. They're talking about Sharon's relationship with Kyle and that she needs to cut things off because she can't be seen as the type of person that would use another person, and that she could end up like, and she looks at Rayanne, like you, but no offense. Speaking of which, we used to have a game. Well, we still probably play it to some extent amongst all my buddies, who we could just say the worst things to each other. But as long as we say no offense at the end, it's okay. It doesn't count.
You're a piece of shit and probably a pedophile. No offense.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, it's okay. I said no offense. Yeah. You can't get mad at me. Yeah. Yeah, it was an ongoing thing for quite a while. Every once in a while, it rears its head. So Rayanne, who doesn't really mind about the comment, but also is like kind of sick of Sharon dealing with Sharon, just yells at Kyle and says Sharon has something to tell him. Sharon starts to talk, but Kyle doesn't want to listen. Kyle only has one thing on his mind. He does mention that she must have lost her bear because he found it tied to a urinal. Now, I want to ask you, are we tied inside the urinal, Clarue here, or tied on the side of the urinal and hanging on the side?
I'd say flusher.
Yeah, I'd say too.
Yeah, so we realized that bear he just handed back to her is now all covered in piss.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's love.
Kyle's a freak. He's like, I'll bring you anything. I'll bring you Brad Pitt movies. I'll bring you fucking hot piss. I'll bring you whatever.
Like, baby.
Whatever you want. he's a giving lover, I guess.
And he's varied. He likes different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So as we all know what Kyle, as any teenager, would have on his mind, he starts talking about wanting to watch another movie with Sharon. He says he's talking about Thelma and Louise. He knows, you know, that one, they're babes, but they're old babes on the run.
Mm.
Sharon's very reluctant, has no interest, kind of starts to want to push Kyle away. And then Kyle mentions the magic words of Bradley Pitt is in the movie.
Is Kyle into Brad Pitt? Was this a trajectory? Because there was, as we said about at the dance, he was possibly looking at Ricky, but it, you know, maybe wasn't. But is this a trajectory like he's about Brad Pitt, or is he just using it that as bait to get Sharon in? Or is it whatever? I don't know.
It's a mystery.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. I wrote, is Kyle smarter than we think? Is he pretending he doesn't know about Pitt? Or does he realize it gets Sharon all riled up? We will never know. I mean, maybe we will know. I don't know. I haven't seen any more episodes in this one. So,
again, Lo, yeah, like for a TV show that, you know, is trying to be like on the more realistic side. I mean, other than, you know, seeing ghosts and all the stuff
we've angels,
yeah, in other episodes. But there's like this funny trope where it's like Sharon can't be tempted into anything unless it's a Brad Pitt movie, in which case she'll fuck anyone. Like, yeah, I'm not buying it.
It seems to be the kind of storyline that they want to stretch over several episodes.
maybe they thought they would get to it in season two. Whoops.
That's right.
So as we know, Sharon gets herself all excited and then says they'll meet at 7:30. So we all know where that's going to end. Sharon's not going to live up to her resolution either. We head to the Chase house. Graham and Patty are discussing the Ricky situation, and they're sort of talking about Mr. Katimsky and how intense he was, which kind of was intense. He did come at them kind of like a spider monkey. They do seem genuinely concerned now, which seems to be a little bit late, but I guess better late than never. Graham mentions to Patty, but then here we go. So here we now swing to a little bit more of what's going to happen. I think what Patty thinks is going to happen, what might lead further down episodes. Again, no idea. Maybe it was a season two thing, but we sort of see this as it goes. Graham mentions to Patty that he's not being honest and there's something he has to tell her, something that's been weighing on him. So we all know that Patty thinks he's going to own up to having had sex with one of the women.
Yes.
Right? Whether it's Hallie or whomever. Because now she has in her mind that Graham has been sleeping around, which in theory we believe to some extent he had been. But it feels like the show kind of let that go.
Yeah.
But Graham admits that he really wants to open the restaurant because he missed Angela's birth. He didn't go to college. He missed Woodstock in two times, and he just doesn't want to miss this.
Yes.
Do we see the connection that he's saying, I just want to do something that I've always wanted to do? Or is this just kind of a weak connection? What do we think?
I mean, I guess if he's like, I don't want to live with regrets. He could have just said that, right? Like, yeah.
Did he really want to miss Woodstock the second time? Because I think we've all seen that documentary. It didn't go very well.
Yeah, he's like, no. Did you see those
99.
Kids? Oh, 99. That's right.
So hopefully he made that.
That's
one.
True.
Yeah. You're right,
94 was actually decent because that was when Green Day blew up from, when they told everybody to throw mud at the stage. And I remember I taped that off from the radio. And it's fantastic. It's a good. Nice. You should look it up on YouTube.
Yeah, Green Day,
Woodstock 94. I've watched, there's actually two documentaries about the Woodstock 99.
Oh, it's
and
wild.
I've watched both of them, and it's terrible.
And as you see, like, great. It was just planned a mistake right from the get-go.
Yeah.
No, everybody. Here's the best place to put 100,000 people in the steaming hot sun, an airfield. Yep. With
100,000 bro dudes.
Yeah, super. Yeah, with just concrete on the ground and no water. That would be great. Yeah, and then where do we go from there?
Let's invite Limp Bizkit.
Ugh. I would have set fires too. Yeah. I love the trope of this whole scene, right? The idea, because again, it's just Graham saying things that are leading up to the big reveal, right? And you see Patty's face in the background and you're anticipating what he's going to say. And then when he says he wants to open the restaurant, Patty's reaction is relief. And I thought, that is not much better than what you were thinking. Like,
and not in Patty's character.
Yeah. Yeah, where all of a sudden she's like, oh, you're not fucking somebody else. All right, open the restaurant, Graham. Use our savings
and open the restaurant. She agrees to fully support him, gets turned on by the notion that they're going to lose any life savings that they have left.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if anything, it would have kind of been better if he's like, you know what, I fucked someone, but at least, you know, I haven't ruined us financially forever.
Yeah, but we still have money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned, Graham seems confused because she's never supportive of him. So, he doesn't know what's going on right now.
Going back to how old do we think Graham is?
40.
40, right?
Woodstock was in 69. So, how old would he have been to go to the original Woodstock?
Well, 95.
Ooh. He would have been 15.
Okay. That's acceptable.
Well, I guess maybe, right? Like, they were, I don't know where he grew up. Assuming that they're, you know, Patty's parents are still there. We never see Graham's parents. So maybe, they went to high school together. He grew up in Pittsburgh. For a 15-year-old getting to New York, right? Like, Northern New York is going to be a big trek. Like, if you're 19, you could do that. But a 15-year-old, come on, Graham.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the second Woodstock when he was 39, like the year before. Come on.
With two kids and a job. We bounce to the tutoring section, or session, excuse me. Brian is talking about how this girl is a junior and asks if he should still call her. And he's still amazed that Jordan got the number. It's a short scene. Jordan seems like he really wants to do work, but in the end, he sort of ends up, helping or tutoring Brian in the ways of the women's heart kind of thing. So we're actually seeing a different kind of tutoring happen here. Sure, I guess.
I just love how Brian's being choosy. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah, he wouldn't go with Delia before either, really, right?
Yeah.
He's pretty picky, this brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to Katimsky sitting at his house reading dinner, I believe. I didn't write that part down, but all of a sudden the phone rings. Ricky's calling the Katimskys from a phone booth. They have a back and forth. They talk here and there. Katimsky wants Brian to admit that he's got nowhere to stay, that he's not okay, but he can't admit it. He ends up lying that he's got a place to stay. Katimsky asks if it's a good place. He says, he really delays quite a while, but he said, I got a good place. But he really appreciates, you can see he appreciates Katimsky's concern. Like, he knows that Mr. Katimsky is concerned. And I must say, as a teacher, this is a component of teaching that people who rag on teachers don't always necessarily understand. Like, this is stuff we do deal with, not necessarily maybe this specifically, but like you have these conversations with kids and you do internalize some of these struggles kids have. And, you know, you do have these connections to students and like this, like it does weigh on you a little bit. And you kind of wonder, what should I do? Should I do more? Can I do more? So like you can kind of get the feeling that Katimsky like wants to help, right? And then some of our suspicions about Katimsky are verified when all of a sudden we see that his partner shows up in the room as he's turning the light off and on, thinking about Ricky's dilemma. And we learn that, and our assumption is that Mr. Katimsky is gay. he has his partner. I doubt it's his husband. It's probably just his partner in 1995. And you can tell that he's really conflicted about wanting to help Ricky. He's concerned about what the perception would be of him helping a young boy who's seen as a gay kid, especially if people find out that he's gay. He could lose his job. He could be crucified. So there's all these things weighing on Katimsky, on like he wants to do the right thing, but he feels like he can't necessarily do the right thing because of the outcome.
Yeah. So in 2023, this would still be problematic for Katimsky to work through, right? Like,
sure.
What would happen if me and my partner brought in this kid, gay or not, into our home under these circumstances, right? Like without any professionals or, you know, social workers or anything involved in the situation. If we just brought him in, like if you heard a story, like if kids just stayed at your house overnight, Tim, and
yeah,
word got out,
that wouldn't look so good,
right? Like for whatever reason, like, you know, for even if in the best intentions, it would be a problem. Sure. Now imagine it in 1995.
Right.
Yeah. So like totally, totally can see why this is a, because, you know, ultimately you can see, as you said, the Katimsky wants to do something, but doesn't do it. And part of you would want to be like, motherfucker, like the kid needs help. But it's like, you couldn't fucking ruin your career. And then some.
People don't realize this, like as a teacher, what that look is like. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, right? Like just help him. He needs help.
Yeah.
Yes, but
yeah,
I have a sense of power over this kid. I am in a power relationship here with this kid, regardless. So
yeah. Accusation is just as bad as it happening.
Yep.
Yep.
Really.
And Ted, how did you describe his partner again?
That was
Sorry. I did mean to throw that in there.
How you say in English, I'm LL Bean Vladimir Putin. So yeah. I think if you look this guy up, you'd be like, oh, shit, it is the LL Bean Vladimir Putin. So feel free to look it up.
And his partner kind of mentions, listen, like, don't feel bad for doing it this way, or don't feel bad for having him come over. We will deal with it, but like, let's make a choice, kind of. We can, you know, it basically was, you know, you're going to help this kid.
Yeah.
Because I guess, like, maybe sees himself a little bit.
Fuck them, right? Kids, is what he says.
Yeah. All right. So then for some reason, I don't know if he gets called or what's going on, because they don't really explain it. We jump to the restaurant and Graham enters it. And then we see Haley, who is wet, maybe standing in the rain before she came to the restaurant, because I guess it's raining outside. She's already there and kind of hiding in the shadows like a vampire.
Well, I mean the way they shoot it, you're supposed to know immediately, like, something is wrong, right? Something is different.
100%.
Right? Hallie normally would be like, Graham!
Super bubbly.
Is standing there quietly in the shadows. So, yeah.
And I guess she's put together, right? Usually now she looks drenched and out of sorts.
Yeah.
On a side note, we can also hear the sounds and lights of cop cars in the background. So I guess, is this a really good spot for a restaurant?
Yeah, they're like, they're going to, all those kids at the warehouse next door need some food.
The homeless shelter kids.
Right there.
They probably have fun.
Yeah.
You know, homeless kids are really hungry.
Yeah.
They'll want to come into our restaurant and eat.
Yeah. Now, she does mention she was able to swing a good deal with the owner. I said, no shit. There's probably a body outline on the floor that you don't see when you move the fountain. She wants to really make sure that she isn't pressuring Graham into the restaurant, or really, now I guess we're led to believe, as we'll find out, or has she been told that she is doing some pressuring somewhere else in her life? Because she mentions that Brad had a theory about Graham. I guess we could all kind of guess maybe what that theory was. But maybe the theory was actually about her a little bit, or her and Graham. But Graham does happen to hit on the had. And we learned that Brad has called off the engagement.
Yep.
Some bullshit about New Year's taking stock and realization, bullshit television writing. But we learned that, obviously, Brad thinks that, I think Haley and Graham are sleeping together, and said, I'm out, peace out.
And, like, they don't actually go as far as to say it. And I don't know if they thought that they were being slick with it. Like, oh, let's leave some mystery to this, because there's no fucking mystery. Like, we know why Graham would have left. like, he's tired of this bullshit.
You mean why Brad would have left?
What did I say?
You said Graham, I think.
He should leave too. But yes, Brad.
Yeah, fuck these guys.
Yeah.
He at least thought about something about the investors. Like, are there people going around investing in the random restaurants, dance floor restaurants, or like, wouldn't it be just like a small business loan? Like,
yeah, she's like, look, here's my pitch to you. I have no experience at running a restaurant. My head chef is some dude that has no formal training that teaches my night class because the drunk teacher, quit. We're going to have a fountain and a dance floor, and we're by an abandoned warehouse where homeless people hang out with.
But hear me out.
Yeah. Dance floor.
Yeah. The banker has the stamp approved. As soon as you tick those two boxes, you're good.
Yeah.
Graham said he's sorry about the fact that the engagement was called off. I think we're led to get the sense that she's kind of advancing on him a little bit here again, but not so much. He asks about what Brad's theory was. Hallie won't say. I think we know, as we said, what the theory was. But she leaves the restaurant saying he won't regret partnering with her in this restaurant. So I guess she's still gung-ho or holding on to whatever semblance of normalcy that she kind of has.
Yeah, this
and
is
I guess
where,
going along with the restaurant.
This is where she says you won't regret this, and we get the Arrested Development narrator that's like, he will regret this. Yep.
And she gives a line like a couple of beats ago and says, you wouldn't be here if you didn't want to be here. It's like, ruh-roh. That's a bad line to say. Like, you're
setting
me up for
something.
Then
you get the 6 months later and him and Patty are making their bed in the homeless shelter.
I remember once I went out on a date with somebody who like behaved like Hallie, which is not entertaining in real life. And it became pretty clear that like things could have, you know, escalated on this date. And the only thing I had in my head was then I would have to talk with her afterwards and I would just feel so guilty. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, I could not do it.
I don't mind like having someone like Hallie around me because I think they're kind of fun and they live their life very differently from me. But yeah, like you said, there's no way I could be with that person.
Yeah, she's so obnoxious.
All right, so then we skip. Oh, this is where I said this too early. Then we skip to the Katimskis where they're sitting down eating dinner, and then we hear a knock on the door. I don't think we're surprised that when Mr. Katimski opens the door, Ricky's there, and he says he found his address in the phone book, and then he finally breaks down. Does a good job too, I must say, as an actor pulling this off. Like, the kid can act. And he's saying it's so hard to be alone. So he's finally able to admit, like, he's alone. He's got nothing. You know, he just wants to have someone there for him. We see this lots of ways in Ricky's life, right? Like, he's a gay kid who, you know, can't really be who he wants to be. You know, he can't have a boyfriend. We learned that earlier. He thought he was going to go out with someone. There's no one there for him. He doesn't have a family. So his friends that have families, they're not the same, so he doesn't have anything there. So we sort of see, like, he's finally admitting to, like, just everything he does, he's just always by himself. And then the show episodes with Katimski just bringing him in to his house for what I would assume is the night, but at least for dinner. And then we roll credits on episode 16, Resolution. So what does everybody think?
It was a great episode. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, putting yourself in the teacher's shoes, it really is a tough situation because, like you said, you know, if it does get out, which I haven't watched ahead, but I'm assuming it will, it probably ruined this guy's life, and he's only trying to help, and it's just, you know, tough situation. But no, it's I found it a very interesting show that made me want to watch the next episode. So,
yeah, thumbs up. I enjoyed it.
Wow. Okay. There you go.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it. It was good.
Yeah. I'm glad that Ricky is kind of finding his way. I think that I want to see if the series continues, I like getting more in depth into the lives of these kids, but the whole, like, you know, Ricky on the street, like running away, trying to find somebody, you know, we've given it two full episodes at this point, and now it's time for the next thing. Like, I'm fine, and I'm glad that it ended well, at least so far, with him in this place. Maybe later he'll be like, Mr. Katimski, my aunt and uncle just came out of the blue and they want to talk to me. And Kentemski would be like, I guess I shouldn't talk to them. See you later. You know, so we'll see what happens. But for right now, Ricky's in a good spot and I like it. And teachers give a shit. That's very nice.
Yeah, I like to think most teachers do give a shit. Push comes to shove. I think most would probably maybe do the same thing. I would think it would be hard to make the decision, though, with a kid that just shows up on your doorstep. But I actually thought I thought that the episode pushed some storylines along. Like maybe we're getting a revisiting. We kind of got a revisiting of this. Graham sort of maybe is a kind of sleeps around a little bit. Maybe is, you know, and then we learn that you get the Ricky thing. We sort of got, you know, Brian and Jordan getting closely. We still see Sharon and Rayanne kind of like, I see like there's a little bit of pushing of storyline here, which is good because the show kind of sometimes wasn't doing it. So that was good.
Yeah, but
I don't think it was the greatest episode of television ever written, as that one person thought. But you know, all in all, it's pretty good.
We are going to have a big twist, though, in the next episode.
Ooh, would you like me to read what it is?
Yes, please.
So episode 17, when we meet next, is called Betrayal. Uh-oh. Now, what could that entail? You say, well, Rayanne wins a role in the school play. Now, three of us never being drama people, but one of us having a plethora of drama experience. Mm-hmm. Was your name, Barry, just put into a draw for the roles and they just pulled it out and said, this is your role?
No, because I think Drama Club, like when I missed the bus this time, it was in full swing. So I think they had a role that didn't have anybody to play. So the fact that I missed the bus, I was automatically thrust into that role. So I don't know how the rest of the casting went.
So anyway, Rayanne apparently wins this role in the school play, but betrays Angela by, bum, 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 sleeping with Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
Oh.
Dropped. Patty suspects Graham. Sorry, go ahead.
Does that mean that she has to do his homework?
Yeah, that's not well, a good idea. At least it might reflect Jordan a little bit more than probably Angela doing it. Patty suspects Graham and Haley's relationship may be more than professional. So it looks like we're getting a little bit of a push on that narrative a little bit, which is, I guess.
Yeah.
Good. We'll see. Never seen it. We'll see. All right, everybody. Let's sort of tie a bow in this as we did a week ago. Let's send it around for some final goodbyes as I kick my ball all the way to Torbay.
Oh, that would be me. Hey, I'm Ted. ShadeWall3 on Instagram machine. Come on and see pictures of Linda. I'm not so active on it lately, so do it or don't. I don't know. Whatever. Booting that ball up the hill. Who's that guy? Who's that? Yeah, who's that dude? Who's
what
that?
Role are you playing
who's that? And Barry, actually, I have Barry on video, and he's got one of those flops around his neck, like Shakespearean things, and he's holding a skull, like Hamlet styles. So he is the drama guy.
Is he holding a skull?
Uh huh. Yeah, that's what he's doing. He's the dramatic guy of the podcast. So thou'st Barry, tell thy his name and things you have to plug.
Actually, I'm holding a Yoda, and I'll turn my camera on so you can see it. Actually,
oh yeah,
yay! Oh, he did actually turn his camera on.
Yeah. So the Queen, my lord, is dead.
There you go.
Yeah, that's my big role. Yeah, I'm Barry, you can follow me on Twitter for pretty much no content because I never post anything. Barry R. Flynn, and I'm a big Shakespeare drama. what do we got there?
Oh, Tim's got this great audio.
Ah, it's a Lucky Charms.
He's got a Lucky Charms Canada thing.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Great job.
Yeah, Barry R. Flynn on Twitter. Let's send it to all the vast Canadian highway network.
I'm going to plug a lot of stuff. The first thing I'm going to plug is the Some Weird Podcast that Barry is the co-host of, where I'm on the Some Weird Podcast website right now, someweirdpodcast.com, looking at episodes from season 5. And apparently, episode 7, The Football War and the Pig War, was released on February 6th, 2034. So,
oh, yeah. We have a DeLorean. Uh-huh. DeLorean, I didn't tell you that.
What's it like? What's it like, Barry?
Uh-huh.
10 years from now.
My so-called life has been rebooted.
Yes.
What episode of Degrassi are we on in this podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
No, yeah. Jared Leto is still Jordan Catalano because he's the
he never ages, except if you look at his Wikipedia page, he is aged, everybody.
It's a continuation, he's still in high school.
Yeah. But yeah, go listen to Some Weird Podcast. And both Ted and Barry over the next few weeks are gonna make guest appearances on one of my other podcasts, Super Hits Podcast.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, where we're gonna be talking about Teenage Dirtbag. Bittersweet Symphony. Yes. I think we're going to talk about, I know we're going to talk about Paradise by the Dashboard Light. And thank you so much for making me watch that music video, Barry.
It's a classic.
Oh,
the whole thing? It's
fucking hideous. and Meatloaf and the woman who he's singing with are like fully making out during a 1 minute sequence. And I wanted to puke. That was what I wrote in my notes. I want to puke. And I think we're going to do Break My Stride unless you, come up with something else you want to do. So anyways, Super Hits Podcast, go subscribe to that. I'm Alan, and I'm at Slip with Five Eyes or Slip, and for this podcast it's superhitspodcast@gmail.com. no, it's not, that's my other podcast. Narbos and Broomheads @gmail.com, at Narbos Podcast on Twitter, at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram. Back to Tim.
And I am Tim, your host tonight, at folly_t on Instagram. Follow it, see if I ever figure out what I'm doing. Otherwise, you guys, we will see you in a week.
Yeah, peace.
Later.
Don't you dare miss it.
From the dudes to you, baby.
Well, I just said I don't get my love. I would never do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about Kylan. I would never get girls out of my house.
Maybe I would.
I would walk around the cafe, yeah.